Oopsla Podcast, Episode 9, Jews with Bob Lee. The Oopsla Podcast brings you up to speed on topics covered at this year's Oopsla Conference, which takes place in October 2008 in Nashville, Tennessee. For more information, visit the website at oopsla.org. The Oopsla Podcast is co-produced by Software Engineering Radio and Dim Sum Thinking. I'm Martin Lippert, your host for this episode. So, welcome listeners to another episode of the Oopsla Podcast. In this episode, we are talking with Bob Lee about his tutorial on Jews. So, welcome, Bob, to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Will you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Yeah, I'm Bob Lee. I'm from a software engineer from Google. I created Google Juice a few years ago when I was working on AdWords, and since then, a couple years ago, I switched to working on Android, which is our mobile phone operating system, and I'm the core library lead on that project. So I work on all the low-level libraries that you program against in the Java programming language.
Ah, cool. So you give a tutorial on Jews at Oopsla. So would you give us a short introduction what Jews is?
Absolutely. For someone who isn't familiar with Jews or dependency injection in general, I like to start out comparing it to the existing ways that we create and create objects and find dependencies in Java. Like sometimes you call new on a concrete class and you can get an instance of that class. Sometimes you create you implement a factory using the factory pattern. Sometimes you use a service locator, which is just kind of a more complex variant of the factory pattern. I like to think that Juice provides kind of the best aspects of all these approaches. For example, before Juice, you had to when you're writing a new piece of code, you had to make this decision between do I want to call new here on a concrete class and call new all throughout my code, or do I want to take the time and implement a factory? And well, if you decide to call new, you may find out later on that you actually needed some more flexibility, and then you'll have to go back and change all the callers to call this new factory. If you implemented a factory up front, as I often used to do, and you might later on realize that you didn't actually need that flexibility, and you ended up adding that complexity and that layer of abstraction, even though it wasn't really necessary. Well, with Juice, it uses the dependency injection pattern, which basically, in this case, means that instead of calling new to get an object, or instead of calling out to a factory or service locator to get my objects, my class just has its dependencies passed to it by some external actor. And that could be a framework, or somebody could be manually creating my class and passing its dependencies. And what this means is that my code is about as brief as if I'd called new. Yet if I later on decide that I need more flexibility, I can always write a custom factory for my object or for my dependency outside without going around and changing all the callers. So you kind of get the best of both worlds. You don't need to add the complexity and the abstraction until you actually need it. One of the other aspects of Juice that I really like in dependency injection is that by kind of expressing our dependencies in the API like we do, for example, you might get your dependencies through the constructor. That means a tool like Juice can look at your code and statically check it. Kind of illustrate the benefits of that. You might be familiar with the service locator pattern already, which is a real world example of that is using JNDI to look up an object at runtime. Well, the problem with that is that your application, if you're missing a dependency, you don't find that out until runtime when you actually touch that piece of code. Whereas with Juice, we crawl your entire object graph, and we can detect missing dependencies at startup or even build time if you have those, if you hook it in that way. The other nice thing is that about this approach is, or one of the places where it really shines is in unit testing. That's one of the places where this kind of flexibility and ability to use your objects in different contexts is really evident. So imagine like a older style unit test where you're testing a class that depends on a factory. Well, at the beginning of this unit test, you might pass in a mock factory, like with a mock object. So it returns a mock object. And then you execute your test code. And then at the end of the test, then you pass in the original factory. And it's really important to remember to pass in the original factory, even if the test fails, or else you can cause collateral damage and other tests can also fail and the real problem can be difficult to track down. And in the real world, you typically don't just have one factory to mock out and clean up. You typically have several factories, right? Well, with the dependency injection approach, your unit test gets a lot simpler. All you do is you create the object you're testing and you pass it the mock dependencies directly. You don't have to deal with factories and stuff at all. You don't have to worry about cleaning them. You just throw away your objects at the end and there's nothing to worry about cleaning up. There's no collateral damage. And your unit test is a lot more concise, which as we all know is good because the less friction to unit testing, the more likely people are to write them.
Oh yeah, definitely.
The other difference, one thing that, typically, I think stumps people when they first get introduced to dependency injection is that they don't understand how the big picture works. And what's kind of interesting is that so you have this notion, you might have a container or as we call it in Juice an injector. It's this object where you kind of you use to bootstrap your application, right? I need to be able to get this first injected object. Like it could be like my server class or something like that. So like my main method in my application, might configure Juice and then ask for an instance of server and then start it. And that's all it would do. From there, that server class will have its dependencies injected into it, like via its constructor, most likely. And then, as Juice is instantiating those dependencies, so it'll inject more dependencies into those, right? So basically what you end up with is you end up with one little piece of bootstrapping code in your main method. And then lots of clean unit testable objects that just take their dependencies in through their constructor.
So, if I write a Java class and I have the I would like to inject some dependencies, what do I do in this Java class to let those dependencies be injected by Juice?
So with Juice, it's really simple. One of the reasons we created Juice was because there was no framework out there at the time that really took advantage of the new features in Java 5. For example, generics and annotations. So in this case, we rely on annotations. If you want something to be injected, you tell Juice explicitly by annotating either like your constructor or you can inject methods or fields. You annotate them with @inject is all you do. And then when Juice goes to create your object, it'll see these members annotated with @inject. And it will go out and find the dependencies that they need to be passed in. And if it doesn't find dependencies, then it'll give you an error at startup. And the way it finds those dependencies is based on the type. So, for example, I might have a service or an interface named database. Juice would find the dependency I configured for database and then inject that in. And we call that binding. So Juice has this notion of binding a type to some implementation of that type. So for database, I might have like a MySQL implementation or something like that. For cases where you have multiple implementations of a single type, we allow you to create your own annotations. For example, in a highly scalable application, I might have two databases. I might have the database that I write to, and then I might have read-only replicas. So for example, if in my application I only need the read-only database, I could annotate that dependency with @read-only, right?
Okay, so you define the object you would like to inject as, for example, have it's a database implementation which works in the role like read-only, and you define at the object where you would like to use the database, say, okay, inject here an object of type database with the annotation or the tag read-only?
Exactly.
Okay. And how do I define those dependencies? Do I write them up in Java code, or so the configuration you mentioned there's a juice injector.
Right, in Juice, we have actually a very simple expression language that's just in Java. It's just a very expressive API. So it's a little difficult to describe via audio, but it actually reads like English, so I guess it's not that hard to describe. But it's basically Java code. We used chained method invocations so that it's type safe and it's easy to read. So in my configuration, I just implement this interface called module, and I get passed this binder object that I can call methods on. So in this case, I would just say bind database dot class, because it's the interface, dot annotated with read only dot class, because it's the read only annotation, dot to, it's a to method, and then I tell it what the implementation of that read-only database is. And I could either just specify a concrete class name, like maybe I have like read-only MySQL database, or I could point it to a factory or whatever I wanted. Kind of the cool thing here is too that so I can have all my client code, which is I could have hundreds of clients that are dependent on the read-only database, right? But they're only dependent on the annotation and the database interface. Now I can change out the implementation as much as I want. I can replace it with a factory, a concrete class, whatever I want to do. But I only have to do it in one place.
Okay. What do you think, for what kind of objects is this kind of dependency injection and juice framework useful for? Sounds like the database or a client class, they're only instantiated once and maybe at the beginning. So like typical singletons or services. What do you think, is that right, or is juice useful for other kinds of objects as well?
Juice is useful for just about any type of object you want to unit test, which for me is most of them.
Okay.
Juice is very lightweight. It's very optimized for creating objects over and over. It's actually faster if your object's lightweight and isn't ex too expensive to create, which most objects aren't. Then it's actually faster to create a new object every time because you don't have the concurrency overhead. But yeah, it's very lightweight, very fast. That was one of our goals. We didn't want Juice's performance to get in the way of how you want to design your code. So it really is safe to use it just about anywhere.
Okay, so if I think about domain models and domain objects, it could be useful to use Juice for those objects as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you definitely. I mean, they have dependencies, right?
Yeah, sure.
Outside of just their, yeah, they definitely have dependencies. On other repositories or whatever you like to call them, data access objects, that stuff especially. It's kind of, this stuff all kind of sucks in the sense that you got to kind of hand over your object creation to Juice or some other framework to make it work. But there's really just not a better solution right now. The best solution would be for some new language or some extension to Java. With some better language support that could allow me to get my dependencies, but still be able to use my constructors, right? Because that's kind of a pain. So it's definitely it's not ideal, but it's a lot better. Handing over this creation of your objects ends up being a lot better than what we had before, but it's still not quite the ideal.
Do you think that some AOP techniques like the Spring guys are using to realize dependency injection for the main objects, where those new constructor calls are intercepted automatically, injecting all the dependencies? Is that maybe that useful, or is there something related in Juice?
So you're talking about injecting objects automatically using AOP? It's not that interesting to me because, well, it depends how you do it, but if you need magic to create your objects, then it's going to make it harder for to unit test them.
Okay.
I typically try and avoid that sort of magic, or creating objects. It's also gonna make your code harder to maintain. It really has to carry its weight. I think the bar for me, to kind of get into bytecode manipulation and that sort of thing is a lot higher. We do some of that in Juice, like we let you intercept methods on objects that we create. Because I actually created AOP, a couple AOP frameworks in the past. And one of the things I realized is that most people just really need it for very simple things, like applying transactions and that sort of thing. So we really just catered to that in Juice and kept it very simple. And we only support like one type, like we try and shield the user from as much as possible. And we try and encourage best practices. Like, for example, with AOP, I feel very strongly that you shouldn't apply interceptors or advice or whatever. We call them method interceptors. Based on method names or anything, I think it's best to apply them with annotations.
Mm.
So, for example, I might have at transactional on my methods that I want to be transactional. I think this is best from a maintenance perspective.
Okay, and that's possible with Juice as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, actually, Rod Johnson and I worked on the AOP Alliance years ago, which is kind of this reusable API for methods and method interceptors and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, I reused that in Juice. So you can actually take the same interceptors from Spring, since they implement the AOP Alliance interfaces, and reuse them with Juice.
Ah, cool. So how would you, in general, compare Juice with Spring or Pico Container or other dependency injection frameworks?
Well, they're all from, like many frameworks, kind of my problem with them was they're from the before the Java 1.5 days, where I think the designs made sense then. I think now that we have these great new features like generics and annotations, it's kind of changed the playing field and changed the game and changed the way we need to think about framework design. And, you know, I think web frameworks are kind of in the same boat too. Before Java 1.5, you know, it made sense for these frameworks to throw type safety out the window because it just really got in your way and wasn't that useful, right? I mean, the second you start using a collection or something like that, you'd lose types and have to revert to casts anyway. Whereas nowadays, I think Juice proves and, other approaches like in the web framework space, I really like GWT. Proves that we can finally have real type safety, and I like to program my applications nowadays to be almost 100% type safe from end to end. And these other frameworks weren't really built with that in mind. The other frameworks use older approaches like external XML and that sort of thing for configuration. They've since adopted approaches similar to Juice, kind of in response to Juice. But I really just see them as kind of, like, I don't think they've gotten it completely right. And it's really just kind of, you know, I haven't looked closely at Pico Container, so I can't say. I've looked a little more closely at Spring. It's kind of layered on top of the old stuff. Whereas with Juice, we kind of went back to the drawing board and created a very lean, tiny API and really fast implementation, and we really really aimed high with regard to quality. And like, for example, one of the places where we really shine is error messages. Instead of just blowing up at the first sign of a problem, we behave more like a compiler where we fail early but not too early. And what I mean by that is if we don't just blow up when we run into the first missing binding, we keep going, and then we find all the potential configuration errors, and we present them to you all at once. So you're not like fixing one binding, rerunning your app, fixing one binding, rerunning your app, that sort of thing.
Mm.
And it also provides, if you try it out, it provides very, very clear error messages. They tell you exactly what the problem is, and they even give you suggestions for how to fix it.
Oh, that's nice. So you mentioned that you invented Juice or wrote the first versions of Juice. While you're working at Google, is Juice now used in many of the Google projects?
Yeah, lots of them.
Okay.
Just about everybody really seems to like it, and it makes sense in most contexts. We're even in the progress of open sourcing kind of a Juice port for GWT. I don't even know if I should be talking about that, but by the time this podcast comes out, I assume it'll be out. really works with GWT and does even more stuff at compile time and supports most of the Juice API. There's certain things that you just can't support because you don't have the full Reflection API and stuff at runtime. And also, like I said, I'm the core library lead on Android. So one of the test cases I used to vet our Reflection API was Juice. So I still have a lot of work to do there. I mean, I've had to focus on more fundamental stuff so far, like getting the core libraries to work. But I'm hoping to write a couple test apps with Juice and see how it performs. Because like the environment we're running in is very performance conscious. You want to do as little work as possible.
Mm.
So we may even need a more customized version of Juice there. So something even a little leaner. Juice is fast, but you know, you want to do as little as possible. But when it comes to server-side apps, we use it very heavily.
Okay. So I saw at the tutorial description that there's a second part of the tutorial talking about something called JuiceBerry. Can you give us a brief idea what this second part of the tutorial is about?
Yeah, JuiceBerry actually comes from one of the earliest Juice users. It's a guy named Zorzella, who's going to be giving the tutorial along with me. And JuiceBerry is a framework that helps you write functional or integration tests. So one of the problems you still run into is, like I explained, with unit tests, it's really easy. You don't use Juice at all. You just instantiate your object directly and pass it some mocks. It's simple as could be. And then for like full-blown integration tests, well, then you just use Juice and you use all the same modules and the exact same configuration. But there's times when you want to be able to swap out certain parts of your configuration, especially without restarting everything, so that your integration tests actually run quickly and so that you you don't have to reconfigure your whole app and start all the way over, right, over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to be able to do stuff like swap out just the billing service so you're not really charging credit cards, for example, in your tests. Mm-hmm. And that's where JuiceBerry comes in. It's a framework that's built on top of Juice that helps you write those sorts of tests.
Ah, cool. So talking about the tutorial, what kind of tutorial will it be? Will it be more like a hands-on tutorial or more lecture-based? Or what can attendees expect from the tutorial?
Well, right now, the plan is to be more lecture-based because that's the type of talk I typically give. But I definitely am interested in giving something more hands-on because those are always more fun, like where you have labs and that sort of thing. So I'm definitely, I'll try and work on something and see if time's going to permit. Because, you know, this stuff's a lot easier if you can, if you just try it. It's really simple. I mean, it sounds like a little complicated when we're sitting here describing it. But if you just write a few lines of code in it, it really makes sense.
So what prerequisites should attendees of the tutorial fulfill?
Actually, just any type of Java programmer, or even I've had talks in the past where C# programmers attended, and they still kind of get things out of it. Because I go into more detail, the stuff that I've talked about just now. And with real code examples and stuff, comparing, like showing you what code looks like if you use the factory pattern or service locator pattern, and then compare, showing you what code looks like if you follow the dependency injection pattern by hand, and then showing you what code looks like if you use Juice. And so you can see the concrete benefits right away. So I'll do that, and then we'll actually be getting close to releasing version 2.0, which has like a ton of exciting features in it around that same time, so I'll probably be able to give some first time demos of a lot of those. So for example, like one of the things that sucks in Juice 1.0 is our custom factories. We call them providers in Juice. So like if you want to provide an object to Juice, you just implement this really simple interface called provider, and your provider can have stuff injected into it too. But, you know, it's like if you have a few dependencies in your provider, well, you have them injected into the constructor, and then your constructor has to set them in a field, and you have your get method that actually creates the objects, and it has to dereference the fields and pass them to the object, right, that it's creating. Well, you end up repeating like this same name. You know, it's like the field name. You know, you'll use it in the local variable. You'll use it two more times when you're setting it, that local variable, into the field. And then you'll use it another time when you're, two, three, four. So you end up like repeating the same name five times for each dependency. It's really tedious. So this next version of Juice is going to have a really cool feature that we're really excited about called provider methods, where instead of implementing an entire class, you just implement a factory method. And it takes the dependencies in as the arguments. It's just really lean. So you repeat the name twice. You know, you have one for the parameter to the method, and then one to, and you specify the name one more time when you're passing it to the object that you're creating.
Mm-hmm.
Makes your code a lot cleaner. People really like it, and makes things much better than any other configuration alternative out there.
Yeah, sounds good. Any other 2.0 features?
So we're really focusing on one of the things I really like about Juice is I try and keep the API, the core API, as small as possible. Because, you know, if we get something wrong, then it's a lot easier to retire an extension than it is to deprecate something in the core API, right? You know, we think of it like kind of like the Java core. You know, if you put something into the core API too soon, well, then that's just going to completely stifle competition, and you're going to end up with something like the logging API in Java, right? So we're really hesitant to do that. 2.0 is really just about kind of adding these kind of tiny features that we've come up with that really help you write extensions and do some really cool things that, you know, stuff to help you do more upfront type checking in your own extension, which isn't so possible in 1.0. Little things like hierarchical injectors are really cool. Like right now you just have one injector. Well, in this next version, you're going to be able to have kind of like a hierarchy of injectors in the same way that you have like a hierarchy of class loaders, right? You know, it's like if a child injector doesn't have a dependency, well, it'll ask its, or before a child injector looks for a dependency, it'll look at its parents first and see if its parent has a dependency. And with this really kind of simple idea, you know, it was a little kind of tricky to get the rules right, which is why we didn't get it into 1.0. But with this really simple concept, it's gonna enable a lot of things. Like you're gonna be able to have like two injectors, you know, like one for your application layer and one for your view layer. And your view layer will be the child injector, which means your view layer injector will be able to see all the bindings in the parent, in the application layer injector, but not vice versa. So you can kind of enforce your dependencies that way. It's gonna enable more security. Related things. Like, I don't know if you've seen Joey before. It's a kind of modified version of the Java language that uses capability-based security. You'll be able to do those same kind of things with Juice now. It's going to be able to enable frameworks to play more nicely together. Like, one of the problems with Juice 1.0, for example, if you're using it with Struts 2, is that Struts 2 has to create your injector because you can only have one. You really only want one injector. You can have multiple injectors, but you really only want one to keep things simple. That's kind of a pain if you want to create your injector somewhere else in your application, right? Or if another framework wants to create it. Well, what you're going to be able to do in 2.0, or what the Struts 2 plugin is going to be able to do, is the application is going to be able to create its own injector, and then that'll be the main injector, and then Struts 2 will be able to create a child injector. And the reason it'll do that is it'll be able to bind all of your actions, you know, like all your Struts 2 actions can get injected. And the reason you want to bind them all explicitly up front, the reason Struts 2 wants to do that, is so that you can get this upfront type checking that Juice is popular for. Otherwise, you would, if you were just using Juice to create the objects at runtime, you wouldn't get the errors until runtime. So basically, when Struts 2 starts up, it'll type check all your actions and make sure all their dependencies are satisfied, and then give you the list of errors and the list of missing dependencies.
Sounds like a huge bunch of exciting new features.
Yeah, we're really excited. The Juice community is really involved. Actually, I'm not even doing the most of the development on 2.0. A guy named Jesse Wilson, who is also a Googler, is leading that up. You might know him from Glazed Lists. That's another one of his open source projects. He's really talented. And then also, you know, this is one of the great things about having an open source project. You know, we already have two books out about Juice, one from A Press and one from Manning. One from Robbie Vanderbrandt and one from Dianji persona. So, I mean, if we just kept it internal to the company, which we could have done because, you know, we have literally thousands of users and it's, you know, plenty to justify it, but we would have never had that level of documentation. You know, it's so awesome.
I think we're coming close to the end of the episode. So any other, let's say, pearls of wisdom you would like to leave with our audience?
Pearls of wisdom. Appreciate static type safety. And really, you know, the thing people don't think about enough, I don't think. Maybe you do. I'm sure this audience does because it's Oopsla. Maintainability, and think about the next guy that's going to be coming and working on your code, right? Make your code statically type safe, lay down some testing infrastructure if you don't have any real tests, that sort of thing.
Great. So thank you very, very much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
And taking the time for this podcast recording, and hope to see you at Oopsla.
I'm excited to attend it. I can't wait. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to the Oopsla podcast. If you want to know more about the conference or would like to listen to additional podcast episodes, visit the Oopsla website at oopsla.org. This episode, as well as all other Oopsla podcast episodes, are licensed under a Creative Commons license.